Wouldn't you like to have a great relationship with a banker? I've got a great relationship with a banker, and now you can have a great relationship with a banker too. And my guest today is going to teach us all about how to connect with someone who actually doesn't just take the money, but also helps you make more money. That's right. My guest today is Dror Zitouni, and he's a relationship executive with Bank Leumi USA. And he's done this for years, but his hallmark, his calling card is he's the person who connects his clients with people who can do business with them. So we're going to learn all about how having a great banker can make all the difference in your business. Please join me in welcoming Dror to the Inside BS Show. Dror, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave.
All right.
I really appreciate it.
it's my pleasure. The pleasure is all mine. I want you to tell folks about Bank Leumi and then tell them how you came to be a relationship executive, vice president of relationship executive with Bank Leumi.
Oh, my God. We don't have enough time, but I'll try. So Bank Leumi, actually the group, is an Israeli bank. It's Israel's largest bank. About $130 or $150 billion bank, and the U.S. arm of Bank Leumi is a much smaller bank. It's about a $7.5 billion bank. It opened in, I think 1955 in New York. We have offices in New York, Chicago, L.A., Palo Alto, and Florida. And being an Israeli myself, coming to Chicago, and I actually grew up in Chicago as well. It's another long story. But coming here, I was looking for some kind of a connection to Israel. And so I, eventually ended up with Bank Leumi USA, which is going to be Valley Bank in 2 months. But we'll talk about that later.
Okay. So your bank is going to merge with another bank. And, we can get into that in a few minutes. But you didn't start out as a banker. You've always been a relationship person, right? Tell folks what your job was before you became a banker.
Absolutely. So the previous job was working for the America-Israel Chamber of Commerce, and that was actually, they teed me up for coming to the Bank Leumi, which was great. And in that role for a couple of years before Bank Leumi, the mission of the chamber was to basically hook up Israelis and Americans to do business. Israeli companies with American companies, either American companies doing business in Israel or Israeli companies doing with America and so forth and so on. Since Israel is such a small country, it's a huge export country. They, tiny, right? It's a tiny country. So they always are looking to go out and sell outside. So it was mostly helping Israeli companies come to the United States. So okay. That was a really great couple of years of meeting very interesting people. Yes.
And how many of those relationships were you able to bring with you when you became a banker?
So it's very interesting. So those relationships came to be where, the chamber is kind of a not-for-profit. So we had a board with a lot of very great people, and I got to be very good. My relationship with them was good, some of them, or most of them, actually. And when I did go when I did move over to the bank, it's funny because in my interview I said, listen, I went to Kellogg, I know finance, I know everything, I just don't want to be a banker. I just don't want to. Don't worry, Dror, you can just do the business development. We'll take care of everything later. And that's exactly what I've been doing ever since I came here. So it's all, as you said, Dave, you're so right. It's all about relationships because, it's a commodity. Bank Leumi, Chase, Bank of America, what's the difference? I mean, obviously there's a little difference, but we all provide the same money. So it's all about relationships and what can you do for them? And maybe I can go from, if you want to, with your permission, I can maybe start talking about how going to somebody and saying, hey, can I loan you money? Hey, can I have $2 million of your money to invest? That's what the approach is. Believe it or not, that's the wrong approach.
Well, tell us. I love that. Tell us what the right approach is.
Well,
because
90%
of the bankers I know are like, hey, we got better rates.
Exactly. There's better rates. I can give you I can give you 1/10 of a percent better. I mean, so it's And that's just the way it is. And it's a cutthroat business, and it's going to be really hard. How do you differentiate yourself? So I think, Dave, with what I've been doing and what I still do now is I don't even talk about banking. How can I help you? And as you said, it's funny because a lot of people, but a lot of bankers know a lot of people, So if I bank a real estate investor, and then we have some guy who just, sold his company for $100 million. And I say, you know what? You should talk to X, to Joe. He's a great real estate investor. He does great stuff. And, next thing you know, the guy who came into all this cash is investing with him. And he's like, oh, by the way, do you want me to bank with you? I mean, it comes later. It comes later. So I think you should not expect them to bank with you, because if you do, you will get disappointed, because not everybody's going to do that. But if you do something good for somebody, it sometimes comes back to you. And that's my approach.
So my focus has always been, I've never had, $20 million to go put in a bank somewhere. So my focus has always been, let me find three people that I can send to this banker so that he takes my call whenever I call him and he remembers who I am. And my approach, I mean, and for me, I can send three people to 10 different bankers in 10 different places and have great relationships with them, and they're going to be happy. And, eventually something will come back my way, or if I call them and I need a favor, it's going to, they're going to do whatever they can to help me. But I can't put $10 million in 15 different banks. I'm just not, I don't have $10 million to put in 15 different banks, right? So, how can I help a banker, and how can I connect with a banker to do business? And for me, it's always been my clients would ask me, particularly lawyers, and this is, I'm gonna beat up some lawyers now for a couple of minutes. The lawyers would say, I bank at XYZ Bank and I never get anything from them. Well, your escrow account is maybe $1.5 million. You're doing residential real estate transactions, so maybe at any given time it fluctuates. Maybe it's $3 million 1 month, $1.5 million the next month. That's not going to make or break the banker's year, right? So tell me, what business have you sent to the banker? Who have you introduced the banker to? And then I get this, right? They look at me like I'm a crazy person. And I say to them, there's two ways to get a great relationship going with a banker. Put $100 million in his bank and he'll always take your call. Or introduce him to three people who do business with him, and then you got something going there. I mean, it's not hard.
You're too kind. I have exactly the same approach as you, but it's not three, it's one. Just one. Because you know what? One is better than zero.
Yeah, I
So,
mean, look, you the my rule of three is, look, you're one person, one of the three is going to be, they're going to look around and maybe they won't do business. The second of the three, they're going to do business, but they're going to be a real big pain in the neck. And the third is going to be a home run. So,
Right. Okay.
if I send you three people, drawer, two of them not going to be so great. One will be excellent and you'll be really happy that I sent you three rather than one.
Dave, I love what you're saying. I mean, it's so funny. I wish we met a long time ago, but I agree with your approach 100%. And you would be surprised, because I'm just like you with this, and people really appreciate introductions. I mean, so much so that if it's a crappy introduction for them, they still appreciate it because nobody else does it for them, So, hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate, and it didn't work out, but thank you very much. So if one does work out, it's a home run. Listen, one home run for a banker makes his year. That's, people don't understand. One great company to onboard to a bank, it's like, wow. So again, it has to be a home run, of course, but that's just the way it is.
And there's multiple ways to start a relationship with a bank or with a banker, right? So
Absolutely.
You don't have to get $100 million deposit. Talk about the different ways. Let's start with commercial. Talk about, because that's what you do, right? Talk about the different ways we can start a relationship.
I do a little bit of commercial and private too. I'm the business development of that.
Okay.
But you're absolutely right, because when you have these people that come to the bank when they're desperate. That's terrible, because then you're screwed. I'm sorry, I mean, nice words, but then it's like, oh, you need our money? Oh, we're not giving it to you. You know, you got to come to the bank where you don't really need the bank's money. So slowly, like, you know, when you open, you know, it's also banks are very regulated, you know. So when you want to start a relationship with a bank and you basically just open an account with them, you're already there, you know. So when you do need something that is a little bit more, you know, robust, then you're already a client, you know, and it's like it's a night and day when you onboard a new client and when you're already an existing client. Now, you can be an existing client with what, $10 in the bank? You know, I'm kidding, but I'm just saying, you don't have to be a big existing client, but to approve something that's significant for a non-client, I'm not saying it's impossible. It's of course possible, and it's done every day, but it's much, much easier if you just start with something small, even though the banker wouldn't want you to do that, right? Because like, hey, I don't want something small. But if you do, you're already a client. So when you do need something bigger, the process is seamless.
Yeah. So explain to people what private banking is. So for people who are listening and, you
Yes.
know, they may not know, they may not understand, like they just go into I don't want to call any individual bank out, but there's one on every corner and
Right.
they, you know, they give them their money, they get a card and they only go to an ATM. They don't know what private banking is.
Right, so banks think they can do everything, right? So commercial banking is basically mostly of what the banks do, and that's the loans, you know, the credit. So the credit, you know, anytime you need a loan or you need a letter of credit or anything that you need credit is commercial banking, okay? Now, private banking is when you have a wealthy individual, when someone has some money and they need to make their money work, that's when they go to the private bank side of the bank. And that's, you know, investments. So whether it's going to be, you know, to open up a $1 million account where, you know, the private banker will invest it, you know, in stocks, bonds, or whatever, private equity, to make your money grow. So that's a two different things, and it's very, very regulated, and the two sides do not interact, you know. But a lot of the private banking of commercial banks come from the commercial banking clients.
Sure.
So the private bankers love the commercial bankers because they feed them. So they have a guy, you know, a real estate guy that has, you know, 2,000 units and he just sold, you know, 200 units and he has all this cash. And so the private banker is like, hey, how can I help you?
Yeah.
So the commercial bankers have a lot of information that can help the private banker, yes.
So when it comes to dealing with clients, high net worth clients for the private bank, right? For the private banking side of what you do. When it comes to dealing with those folks, do you make investment suggestions or they come to you and they say, "Hey, I want to do this," and then you just execute on it? Do you offer guidance or do you just execute on transactions?
I think they did, again, I'm not a private banker, but I believe they do both, you know, discretion and non-discretion. But I believe I don't think they will do anything without their consent, obviously.
Of
They're not
course,
going to
yeah.
say, hey, here,
Yeah.
give me $1 million. Don't worry about it. We'll talk next year. You know,
Right.
they advise with them, but, you know, they're advisors, they're investment advisors. So they say to to the client, hey, unless the client says, hey, listen, do whatever you want with it, which I don't know any of that say that, but
Yeah, I don't know
some
anybody who would die. Yeah,
Right,
no.
exactly. But, you know, but they ask him, you know, what kind? I mean, you know, there's so many stocks and so many bonds and what, you know, and now the new thing is conscious investing. I don't know if you know about that. Like, I don't want my portfolio to have, you know, I'm a vegetarian. I don't want my
Right.
portfolio to have Tyson Foods, you know? So that's a
Don't
huge.
invest in any tobacco companies. Don't invest
Exactly.
in any. Yeah,
Exactly.
exactly.
That's a very, very big market right now that's growing like crazy. It's very interesting, actually.
So describe for us, like, what's a typical day in your life? Explain to us what you do throughout the course of the day or the week.
So, you know, it changes, but I it changes all the time, of course, but I try to make it a point, and it's, again, it's very hard. You know, January was great, right? Every January you do what you need to do, and then February comes, you forget about it. So it's just like the gym. So, exactly. So, you know, what you want to do is you have, you have to work with lists. So let's say I have, 50 people that are my, not my clients, but they're my prospects that I know. They're my met prospects. Okay. So I have 50 of them. So I try to, again, the number is different for everybody. For me, maybe it's five. For somebody else, it's 50, right? So I want you want to, whatever the number is, on a daily basis, to connect with, five of them, let's say. But then more importantly, I would say, is your list of unmet prospects. So, I don't know X company, but I sure would want to know them, So I do research on them. I see who the CFO is. I see who the CEO is. I LinkedIn, message to them or whatever it is. But these are unmet prospects. These are people that I've never met, and these are people who don't know me. Now, the key is how many of those can you move to your met prospect list? That's the key. So that's basically what I do on a week. Again, I want to tell you on a daily basis, but I would be lying.
you get five contacts a week, and you're in great shape. Yeah.
Oh, you're in amazing shape. But again, I'll tell you why it's so hard, because the unmet prospects, you got to have a really strong heart, because you get a lot of no's, you get a lot of no responses. But you know what? Guess what? The one guy that responds to you, that's what gets me excited.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. But it's a lot of work, and if in one sentence, consistency is the key, because most people will do it, as I said, January, then forget about it until next January, and then talk about it again. If you're consistent, I think that results will come for sure, 100%, whatever kind of results they are. But
I want you to talk about referrals. I want you to talk about how you receive referrals and what your process is for stimulating referrals. But I want you to hold that thought for just one sec.
Of course.
Because I need to remind people that our show is brought to you by Sendrowski Corporate Advisors. For over 35 years, Sendrowski Corporate Advisors has provided expert client service to people all over the United States. Now, Drawer mentioned private banking, right? And private bankers work with people who are involved with family offices. And for those of you who are new to the show and you don't know what a family office is, affluent people will sometimes create a company to manage their money. And sometimes two, three, or four or more affluent families get together and they form a company that will evaluate investments, invest their money, and manage their money for them. These are called family offices. There are multi-family offices and individual family offices. And Sendrowski wrote the book on family office management. They literally wrote a textbook on how to set up and manage from the legal and an accounting perspective a family office. If you have high net worth individuals that are your clients, or you are a high net worth individual and you want someone to come in and give you an objective evaluation of how you're running your family office, you need to give Sendrowski a call. You can reach them at 866-717-1607. 866-717-1607. Sendrowski Corporate Advisors is a CPA firm with a different perspective. We're also brought to you by My Revenue Roadmap Guide. So if you're a professional and you want to employ a relationship-based business development approach, you don't want to put up billboards, you don't want to send out a whole bunch of flyers, you don't want to do anything that's going to make it seem like you're desperate for business, you need My Revenue Roadmap Guide, and it's free. I'm going to give it to you as my way of saying thank you for watching the show or for listening. Here's what you need to do. Go to revenueroadmapguide.com. That's a website, revenueroadmapguide.com. Enter your contact info and you'll be able to download this guide for free, and you can customize it. It's a business development plan. So let's say you're a lawyer and your boss comes in and he says, "What's your business development plan? Come to my office in 15 minutes," and you don't have one. Go to revenueroadmapguide.com, download it, put your name on it, hand that in. You got a business development plan. It's that easy. Thank you for being a listener. Thank you for being a subscriber. I really appreciate you. That's my gift to you. All right. So Drawer. Referrals, right? You, like me, I'm sure, love a good referral. What do you do that helps you get more referrals?
So, yeah, that's a million-dollar question, right? Referrals are very, very, very important. However, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years. God, I'm aging myself. But, you know, I always said, like, the first few years, I ran like a, you know, chicken without a head. I mean, you could try so many things and just get the wrong referrals. And so you should get to the point where, you know what's good, what's bad. But so referrals are actually the engine of the whole business, everything. And forget about banking, anything, you know, anything is referrals. So it's very hard. Now, I think the referrals, I don't know if you agree with me, but the referrals will always come to me from people who I completely trust. So if I, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, I met I'm at a networking group, and I met with this very high-end divorce lawyer. Not because I want to get divorced, but I mean, she's great. You know, her name is Morgan. You know, and she only deals with extremely high-end, you know, cases in Chicago and so forth. So she's got crazy stories. And we met for about an hour because, you know, we were part of the networking group and we just met one-on-one. And in that hour, I really trusted her. She really trusted me. She told me what she needs. I told her what I need. She gave me 2 referrals. I gave her 3. This is within a few days. Because she says, she trusts me. She knows what I want. It seems to her like you can't just ask for referrals over, you know, the internet. You know, you got to meet. That's what COVID really, like, really – people suffer like crazy because the meeting, the face-to-face meeting are so crucial and important. And I've tried to do my best during the last 2 years, but, you know, it's hard. It's very hard. So I think that when someone trusts you a lot and you're telling them, listen, these are the 3 things that I'm looking for. And so they, you know, because I think some people that if they like you, they want to refer to you business, but they don't know what. You really have to guide them. You have to guide them like really well on what you want and what is a waste of your time, and they will tell you what's a waste of their time, you know.
So then, Dror, for you, give us so let's say we're meeting, and the next time I'm in Chicago, we will sit down, and we'll have breakfast or we'll have lunch. But let's say we're sitting down right now and we're meeting. Who's your ideal client? If I, you know, tell me who, if I know them, I can bring to you that would be perfect for you.
So. That's a great question. So the bank does 3 things. You know, we do commercial real estate banking and lending. We do C&I lending, and I'll explain in a second. And we do a little bit of nursing homes or healthcare. But, you know, the focus a lot for a lot of banks in Chicago and everywhere is C&I. C&I is commercial and industrial. Commercial and industrial is those companies that manufacture widgets. You know, they distribute, they do anything that's not real estate or healthcare, you know, it's C&I. So when I say that, you know, all of the banks are going to the same companies because these companies are great to bank. And more importantly, banking, again, as I said before, it's very regulated, and you don't want to have 80% real estate, because real estate lending, I won't say anything, nothing is easy, but real estate lending is a little bit easier because real estate lenders are always looking for money. And, you know, they do 2, 3, 4 projects. Guess what? The bank says to them, hey, we have enough money with you. Why don't you go to the next bank? So they're always looking for more banks to lend them money. C&I companies, like the manufacturer that has $75 million worth of business a year, he only needs 1 bank. And he is not leaving that bank unless the bank really screws up, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for those banks, for those companies. And why do I look for those companies? Because it's really good business for the bank. We can really add value to those companies, I think. We can maybe lower their fees. And it's a true relationship when you have, because, you know, the CFO of these companies, you know, will have to deal with the bank almost on a daily basis,
right?
Unlike the others. And what's moreover, we can't do more real estate or more healthcare if we don't do more C&I, you know? So if you want to grow, we need to do more C&I business. So C&I business, again, is the manufacturers, distributors. And as you know, in the last 20 years, there have been less and less of them in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So, but that's the perfect referral for me.
So what are we listening for when we're out there meeting these people? What are we listening for? Are we listening for, hey, I need to, you know, because of supply chain issues, I need to beef up my inventory whenever I can, and I need a bigger line of credit? Is that, I mean, that type of thing?
Very, you know, Dave, you're smarter than I thought. So it's great. You know, it's a great question. And, you know, it could be a mix of things. You know, hey, you know what? I was with this bank. They were great. You know, I was at $20 million, now I'm at $60 million. They can't give me a line of credit of $25 million anymore. They could give me 10, they could give me 12, but that's it. They're too small. So that's one case where we're perfect, you know, because then they need to go to a bigger bank. Another one is, you know, my banker, you know, for 15 years where I loved, you know, left. And so this new guy that they put on me, he sucks. I hate him, you know. So that's another one. So again, the more referrals you have, the more people you know, the more of a chance you will maybe find someone. Because if you talk to one guy, what's the possibility of the one guy knowing some guy that his friend that has a $60 million, you know, sales company a year that happened to hate his banker? Not much. But if you talk to 100 people, maybe one. So that's it. Just it's moving all the time.
You'll be amazed at, so I work with people and they tell me, you know, it's hard for me to find business for a bank. And I'll give you, let me give you this scenario, drawer.
And after you're done, I have a really funny story.
Okay.
About that.
So a number of years ago, I'm sitting down with a lawyer with whom I'm working. I'm helping him with business development, worked very, very high end commercial stuff. And he says to me, I said, listen, I have a couple of bankers I want to connect you with. He's like, oh, you know, the bankers are going to want business and I don't want to have those conversations with my clients because the banking relationships are always so sensitive. I don't want to get them a switch. And I said, all right, so we'll set that aside. We'll do something else. So we're talking. So he tells me about this company. Listen to this, Troy. You're going to wish I knew you then. So
yeah,
he tells me
I already
about this.
Wish.
He tells me about this company. He says, I have this company that they're in the oil and gas shipping business, and they come here to the port. I live in Miami. They come to the port of Miami and they wholesale the gas, bring it over here, and then they resell it. And he said they turn their ships twice a month. He said they have the opportunity to buy an additional ship, but they need to be able to finance a third turn. The ship, they can pay for the ship, it's not a problem, but that monthly financing. And I said, well, how long do they need the money? He's like, they need the money for 3 days, 4 days. And I said, how much money do they need? He said, they need, like, you know, I think it was at the time, depends on the price of gas, anywhere between 7 and 14 million for 3 days. He said, and he's like, their current bank, they're really comfortable doing the two turns. They don't want to add the third turn. They're concerned about it. And I said, so you just told me that you didn't want relationships with a banker. This is the perfect thing to bring to a banker. So I had a friend who was, he was coming up through the ranks of a large multinational bank. And I'm having coffee with him one day, you know, about 2 days later. And I said, listen, I got this thing. I don't know if you're interested. It seems, I don't know your business, but it seems like pretty low risk. Like, you know, four or five days, you give them the money. You know, I wasn't going to tell them 3 days. 4 or 5 days, you give them the money and you get the money right back as soon as they sell the gas. Who's not going to buy gas? They're going to sell it. And he's like, oh, I'll take a look at it. So he ended up doing that. And they worked together for a year just doing that one turn. Do you know that guy gave him, the client that the lawyer introduced him to, gave him all three turns every month after that? It was great. And they were getting, you know, Drew, they were getting like a point, sometimes 2 points for letting him hold the money for 3 days.
Just so you understand, banks love that business. Why? Because it's called a revolving line of business. It's truly a revolving because they take it.
It's
they
the
pay.
Same money.
They take it,
it's
take
the same
it.
Money. Yeah.
And they take it and they don't, the bank doesn't, you know, worry after 7 months, hey, they're going to pay us back, because they pay us back after 4 days all the time.
And it's, you know, it's a business with a commodity that everybody needs. It's not like you're not going to sell the oil or the gas. Everybody needs it.
Actually, the bank probably prays, hey, how about you can't sell in 4 days. Maybe you can sell in 14 days, you know? So I can charge you interest for another 10 days, you know?
But my point in telling that story, Dror, is, you know, people think it's really hard to refer a banker, but this guy had this, the lawyer, these people came to the lawyer with this problem, and the lawyer's like scratching his head going, we need a private investor to do this. Just go, you know, if you have a relationship with a secondary bank, talk to the secondary bank, talk to another banker. It turns out that became their primary banking relationship after 12 months. It was fantastic.
So I got two things to tell you, and it goes back kind of to what I said before. First of all, you kind of don't want to go to a banker when you're desperate. You kind of don't want to, you know, as I said before, you know, you kind of want to maybe know two or three bankers just so, you know, again,
sure.
Before I said, yeah, open an account, you don't have to. You just have to know the guy and be, you know, be familiar with them. So in case that happens. So my story, it's just funny, I got many, but this one's funny. You know, years ago, I met the greatest guy, you know, South African, such a nice guy, has an amazing company, $60 million in sales, I mean, dream for our bank. And he was with another bank. And it's important, he had a lot of hair, okay? And, you know, we met like three, four, five times, six times, seven, you know, CEO comes here, I want to impress him, so we go to visit this guy. And, you know, one of the things that the guy said, listen, I love Dror. He's such a good guy, and we get together and this, but, you know, I would rather pull out my hair one by one than to leave my bank. Because, you know, again, C&I business, you know, they have like all these accounts and like to change it. It's just a pain in the ass, you know.
The cost of switching is really... Yeah, prohibitive.
You know what? So now banks are doing, they're like, you know what? The cost is all on me. Still, the company's like, you know what? Still, it's a pain in the butt. So anyways, so fast forward, you know, I'm still, and that's why I said it's very important to be consistent and persistent. So, you know, I meet with a guy at least twice a year. 6 years go by, Dave. 6 years go by. Hey, can we talk? I'm like, what happened? You know, his banker left. The new banker is not giving him anything. He's not personable. There's nothing there. There's just nothing going on, you know? So, you know, he came over. It was amazing. It was like a huge success story. But what I'm saying is, you never know, you know? The fact that someone does not want to even talk to you the first meeting about switching, you know, shame on you for asking them to switch. You don't want to tell them. You say, listen, this is what we do. I'm here for you, you know? And that's it, yeah. Yeah,
I mean, for me, what I love about what you're saying is you're making it impossible for people to forget you. So, you know, as it is now, you're a memorable guy because here in the U.S. you have a very unusual name. Nobody's gonna forget that name. So, you know, but that's a good thing in business. That's a really good thing. And you're constantly reaching out to them, just checking in, see how you're doing. That's the thing. If people forget about you, they can never do business with you. So don't feel like you're being pushy. You're just there. And when they need help, you'll be the first place they turn. That's the whole ball game. If you're looking to get referrals, make sure you let people know that you're a resource. And, you know, send them something every now and again. As far as I'm talking about business, I'm not talking about, you know, cash in the mail. I mean, if you want to send them cash in the mail, that's not going to hurt, but very few people can afford to do that. You know, send them some business from time to time, let them know that you're there for them. And when they have an issue and they need help, they're going to help you. All right. So Dror, coach us up on just the average small business, right? Coach the average small business owner on what he should be doing to make sure that his relationship with his bank is always great and that he's going to get the most out of that relationship?
It's a good question because, as you said, you know, bankers want bigger and bigger, you know, companies. They don't want smaller
companies.
So
the average, you know, the $5 million business or a $10 million business.
I think the $5, $10 million business is exactly the point where they're like, hey, you know, we're not getting any love here. So I think that, you know, it's very important for that company or for the owner of the company to have a good rapport with the banker, because usually it's those companies who need more, you know, because they will either grow or, you know, they have a bad month it's not good. You know, a company with $100 million a bad month, you know, whatever, it's fine. So they need sometimes an increase on their line of credit or something like that. So they always have to be, you know, as you said before, you know, a lot of people complain, you know, oh, you know, my banker never calls me, my banker never called me, which is so true. I overcall, but it's very true. But I'm not a bank. Again, I'm not a banker. I'm a business developer. So,
right, bankers, you're a relationship guy who happens to work at a bank. Yes,
it's exactly what I am. But what I'm saying is, you know, bankers get to be so busy, and also sometimes their personalities are different than me. You know, they're numbers people. You know, they like the numbers. They like to look at the spreadsheets. I hate it. So they get busy, and next thing you know, it's the end of the day. So they're not calling you, not because they don't want to. They just are too busy with other things. I think it's important for a small business owner to make an effort to reach out to the banker, because I think the banker will really appreciate it, because nobody reaches out to the banker unless they have problems, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody. Mm-hmm. When they have problems, they reach out to the banker and they scream at him or her. So I would just say, you know, keep a, you know, once a quarter, you know, meet with a banker, you know. It's as easy as that.
All right. So talk about what's going on with your bank now, and what are the advantages to merging? Who's the bank that Lumi is merging with?
So Valley National Bank is a great bank out of New Jersey. It's a big bank. It's completely different than ours. They have a huge presence in New Jersey, New York, and Florida, actually. They have a $10 billion business in Florida, and Alabama a little bit. They do a lot of different lines of business than we do, and Bank Leumi is very unique, very unique. We're a small bank, $7.5 billion. We got offices in Chicago, one office. We got an office in Miami. We got an office in LA, in Palo Alto, in New York. Like, there's no other bank that is so small that has such a huge, you know, geography, you know, presence. So Valley Bank saw an opportunity here of, hey, you know, it's not that expensive to buy these guys, first of all. And we love the business because, again, we do middle market, so we don't do the $5 million credit. I mean, we'll do it, but our niche, our bread and butter, middle market companies, so from, you know, maybe sales of, like, you know, 40, 50 million to 200 million, okay? So, and Valley is doing exactly what you're talking about, the retail banking, a lot of small companies and small. So this is an addition revenue stream for them, and they like this business a lot. So mm-hmm. Here they're buying this company that has companies all over the U.S., you know, that are doing what they are striving to do. Plus, we're very, very, very robust with international business because we're an Israeli, you know, owned
bank.
Sure. They love that. I mean, there's a lot of banks. I mean, you'd be surprised, the gigantic multi-billion dollar banks in the U.S. know nothing about international banking. So the fact that we don't just do it, we're very good at it, was very appealing to Valley National Bank. For me personally, and for Chicago, again, a merger is always a little bit scary, of course, you know. But for the Chicago branch especially, you know, Valley has nothing here. You know, they have nobody here. They don't know anything about the Midwest. So it's a huge opportunity for us. You know, we have to, of course, you know, perform and show them. But it's basically the way we look at it at the Chicago office is, look, we were a $7.5 million bank with capabilities of XYZ. We became a $55 billion bank with capabilities of what? You know, tenfold. So that's great.
You have a whole different market segment now that you can serve.
Right. So. We never did home mortgages. Now I can go to the guy who is investing with us, who's buying a home in Florida, right? $5 million. Hey, I can give you a mortgage, no problem. So yeah. It's very nice fit. Remains to be seen, but it's a very nice fit for now. Yes.
And when is that going to take place?
So it's like, it's public, so I'm not saying anything, but it's
right. But it's regulatory. It needs regulatory approval and
exactly.
Due diligence,
so
and everything.
Yeah. Hopefully, April 1st. Hopefully,
okay.
April 1st. So it's coming up.
Great.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so far, it's been seamless.
So, Dror, I want you to give some thought, take a minute, give some thought to three big things that people should take away from our time together today. Three big things. While you're thinking of that, I'm going to remind people once again that we're brought to you by Sandrowski Corporate Advisors. Over 35 years, Sandrowski has been helping with accounting. They're a CPA firm with a different perspective. I want to highlight Sandrowski's litigation support function now. So Drawer mentioned that he was working with a family law attorney. If you happen to be a family law attorney and you're looking at the family's financials and something seems a little funny, Sandrowski is the perfect CPA firm to call. Why? They do this all the time. They help people who are in the midst of litigation evaluate the financials. They look at both parties' financials and they determine whether or not things seem to be on the up and up. They can also help you put your financials in order if you're getting divorced, or let's say you're entering into a new venture and you want to make sure that your finances are clean. Sandrowski is the perfect group to call. If you want to reach out to them, you can call them at 866-717-1607, 866-717-1607. And once again, I want to remind you, don't forget Revenue Roadmap Guide. If you need a business development plan, you're a professional, go to Revenue Roadmap Guide. You can download my business development plan for you for free. Thank you for being a part of the show. Okay, Drawer, so what three things should we be thinking of, should we take away from this conversation?
The first thing you should take away is everybody listening should have the honor of being on this podcast with you. You're amazing. You're great. It's true. You're awesome. You're so... we talked just before this.
I was very nervous. It's Hug a Banker Day. Thank you, Drawer.
You know, Dave paid me a lot for this, so it's okay to say that. No, I'm kidding. But I think the first takeaway is, you know, always be yourself and always try to help others, not thinking about what can I get from somebody else, because I'm telling you, you do this enough, you will get it back. You won't even know where it's coming from. So always try to, you know, again, I think, Dave, we're on the same page. You know, whenever you meet someone, how can I help you? Right. Who can I refer you to? And when you do that, and again, if you can't, you can't. But when you do that, I think people will really appreciate it and will, Dave, as you said, they will know you. They will trust you. They'll say, hey, this guy actually wanted to help me. You know, all these other 10 people that I met just wanted to think, look, Dave, you said, this guy says, oh, bankers always want business for me. That's what everybody says, you know. Lawyers always want business for me, you know. They do, you know. But I don't know, when I meet a lawyer, I don't even expect for them to give me business, but they do, you know. But anyway, so that's the first thing. I think the second thing is, which I'm not as good as I should be at, I think to be very, very methodical with the list, you know, with met and unmet, it is so key to be organized. Again, it's my fault that I'm not completely, but that really is important because, you know, the more you do this, the more you're like, oh my God, oh, Dave, who's Dave? Oh yeah, I talked to him 2 days, you know, you forget. And so if you have those lists and you have some things like, hey, get back to him and do some reminders, that really, really, really helps and it makes your life so easy. And the third thing is, you know, get out there. I mean, I know we're so comfortable sitting at home and, you know, I do have jeans on right now, you know, so, but the thing is like, you know, I mean, we're so comfortable doing Zoom and all this stuff and it's all good, but I think that the face-to-face meetings are so crucial that, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I just wrote an article, published it the other day, on how the cure for the COVID blues is just to get out there and start meeting your clients. I mean, you know, if you're vaccinated and if you've had COVID or if you know, a combination of the two, go out, you know, get back to it. It's a competitive advantage right now. We're recording this in the beginning of February 2022. Since November of 2021, I got back on the road because I was vaccinated 3 times and I had COVID. So I thought to myself, hey, listen, I'm not going to be subject to a bad outcome. It's going to be fine. I called my clients and I said, I want to come see you. I want to thank you for doing business with me during a very difficult time. And I want to see how things are going. None of my clients said no. So between November and now, I've been to Boston, New York, Chicago several times, New York several times, Boston twice, and Western Canada, Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And every single client said yes. Now, some of them, you know, we didn't meet in like a confined little room. We met in a wide open space or whatever to make them feel comfortable, but nobody said no. And the point is, right now, as you're listening to this, I don't care if you're listening to this in the beginning of 2022 or the end of 2022, meeting in person is a competitive advantage because, as Dror said, it's so easy on Zoom just to say, oh, we're going to schedule a Zoom meeting. Make the extra effort, especially if the person is a high-profile prospect for you. They're going to really appreciate it. And Dror, let me tell you, I appreciate you being here. Let me give folks your phone number. So if you want a relationship with a banker, there's nobody better than this guy, Dror Zatouni. You can reach him at 847-209-1408, 847-209-1408. I'm putting all of his contact info in the show notes. I'm going to put his email in the show notes as well. If you're in Chicago and you want to do business with a great banker, Dror is the person to call. Anywhere in the Midwest, Dror is the person to call. Anywhere in the United States, call Dror. He'll get you set up. Don't worry about it. 847-209-1408. Dror, thank you so much. It was great having you on. I really enjoyed it.
Dave, next time in Chicago, I'd love to meet you.
We will get together sometime, actually within the next 4 weeks I'll be there. So I will reach out to you. And we will definitely get together.
Thank you. I'll think of three people.
All right, folks, that'll do it for another episode of the Inside BS Show. My name is Dave Lorenzo. We're back here again tomorrow with another great show for you. Until then, here's hoping you make a great living and live a great life.